Last I checked, we were around 45 to 50% of people are at the bottom of funnel stage.
Okay. So they've seen something already more than once.
Yeah, exactly. And then 25 to 30 is on the middle funnel. So the top of funnel tends not to convert.
Right. I think a lot of people throw an ad up and say, buy my car sealant. Mm-hmm. And then they're like, oh, that didn't work.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, then you're missing out on mm-hmm. probably 90 to 95% of your buyers. Mm-hmm. I think that's important for people to know, because that's sure. the difference in making a business and not making a business.
You're listening to Business Lunch with Roland Frazier. This is your seat at the table. Welcome to Business Lunch with Roland Frazier. I'm the producer of the show, Darren Clark, and we are so glad you tuned in. We have a guest today that lets us behind the curtain with his traffic secrets. Chad Hamsey owns and runs multiple companies and is a true traffic expert. So listen in closely for some strategies and insights that will make your campaigns more successful. Be sure to hit subscribe and head to businesslunchpodcast.com to sign up for exclusive content from Roland.
Hey, everybody. Roland Frazier here with Business Lunch. And our guest today is Chad Hamsey. Chad, welcome to the show.
Pleasure to be here.
Just so people know when they go to look for you, how do you spell your last name?
Yeah, it's H-A-M-Z-E-H.
Okay, cool. And tell us a little bit, before I get into your entrepreneurial journey, tell us a little bit about where you are now and what you're doing. You've got different businesses. And I always like to ask this question just so people know that they should listen to you. Okay. But you've done multiple 7-8-figure businesses. You've got a couple now in different phases of being, right?
Exactly. So right now where we're at, I have a publishing business, and that's the one that's currently in like the 8-figure type range. More importantly, we have large email lists that we deal with, and we just kind of continue developing those and send out a lot of content. And that's actually how we monetize a lot of it.
Okay.
Is through content, and we're building out an e-commerce leg there. And the other business that I've been focusing on a lot more now in the past year, we just launched it May, June of last year, is a e-commerce brand in the car care space. And I like to say I've chased rabbits over the years, but that's the elephant that I'm looking to hunt.
Is it?
Yeah. So like, it's a really passionate market, awesome guys in it. Love the feedback we get. So it's just something I'm trying to build, you know, out long-term. So I put a lot of my time there. So
nice. Yeah. So tell us a little bit about where you got your start and what the journey has been so far before I start asking you all your traffic secret questions.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. So it's an interesting story. I was never really a lot into entrepreneurship. I grew up, my dad was an entrepreneur. My brother eventually went into it.
What did your dad do?
Well, he did a lot of everything, but he owned like furniture type stores, and then he became someone who did like owned car dealerships. And then after that, he eventually went into home building contracts.
So he was a true entrepreneur. It's like lots of it, serial entrepreneur.
For sure. Yeah, nice. Exactly. Okay. And my brother eventually, he's a contractor as well. So he builds homes and all that sort of stuff.
Okay. And where was the growing up area?
I grew up in Calgary, Canada. So I'm from there originally. I moved to the US about 5 years ago.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah, exactly. Nice. So that's where kind of we were, you know, I was in the corporate world. I was a business analyst, you know, mid 2000s.
Really?
That sort of thing.
Like kind of a statistician numbersy kind of thing?
Yeah, well, so I worked in a telecom, and basically we had mandates that we had to hit monthly in terms of pickup call times. So what was interesting about that is we had to redirect call traffic. So it was kind of a good kind training ground.
Email-like, right?
A little bit, yeah.
Interesting. Yeah, what was that like? What does redirecting traffic call time mean?
It's a little interesting, and people who wait on hold will hate this, but basically, during the months that were slow, we had to actually hold people out in the queue and not get picked up right away, because the, you know, board of directors and shareholders would see like, oh, people are getting picked up like within 2 seconds. That means there's an overstaffing at the time.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So we had to kind of like, we were mandated.
So the system actually encouraged poor customer service because
20 seconds. So the mandate was 20 seconds. We had to get them in at 15 seconds. Okay, good. There's just enough call flow that they're doing it well.
So funny.
Now, on the flip side, during busy times, you'd have people waiting 5-10 minutes. You know how it is. And that was not ideal. So we had to get more staffing on, and we had to work on all that. So it was interesting.
Interesting. Okay. So then where did you go from there?
Well, so, you know, all my life I wanted to, you know, fight competitively, mixed martial arts, jiu-jitsu.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Oh, cool.
And so I actually, I had 20 professional fights and, well, 19 professional, one amateur. So as I was doing the, you know, the business analyst stuff, I was like, you know, I talked to my wife and I said, you know, I'm not really doing what I want to do. I'd like to see what I could do in this fighting space. Right.
Right. Right.
So around 2008, we moved to Thailand for 1 year. She competes as well. And all we did was like,
oh, wow.
Yeah, absolutely. All we did was like fight and train full time.
Okay.
So, you know, really relaxing, kind of gypsy lifestyle, but just train every day, like got to take a good crack at it.
Nice.
Right?
Nice.
So in February 2009, you know, I got a call. My dad was getting sick. He got pretty sick. So I had to move back to Canada because he was going to be living with us. So we were taking care of him. And it was one of those things where I basically was 2 months before, I was basically the guy like searching in Google how to make money online.
Okay.
Yeah.
Nice. That's had how, never done it before.
Never done it before.
Okay.
I mean, didn't really know much about it
right.
at all. And so I just started searching frantically because remember, I just had this year of freedom and now I'm going back. I'm like, I will go back.
I don't want to be an analyst.
Yeah. Like I will go back if I really have to, because you know, I came back, I had the mortgage. My wife was soon to be pregnant. So
right.
I had a baby on the way.
Right.
Take
right.
care of my dad.
And dad. Yeah.
And dad.
Lots
and so
lots
I was like, okay, I'll teach some fighting privates, you know, first for a while, train some people. But I'm just going to learn how to make money online. Right? So gave up, you know, 40 hour per week thing to work like 70.
Okay. I want to know though. So what was yeah. the first make money online thing you found back in 2009?
Oh man. Okay. So
was that Corey Rudel or was he before that?
Corey, I didn't come across his stuff.
Like yeah, I never did either. It's
no?
really fun. No.
I mean, he did a lot of stuff. There,
yeah. A lot so. Of people got started there, but
absolutely. I missed.
Okay. So what did you find?
You know, I found Frank stuff, some of Frank Kern's
really?
Stuff.
Really? Way
yeah.
back then? Like,
yeah,
that was
yeah.
like parrot training days, the underachiever method?
Exactly, methods? Yeah. I found, okay. So, and then, you know, I came to some SEO stuff. Can't remember who it was from, but I tried some SEO, you know, for ClickBank products and all that sort of stuff. And I really didn't like SEO.
That's funny.
It was just not my thing as I was learning it, right? Nowadays, it's quite different. But so trying different things. I kept searching around and I found that you could pay for traffic. And I came across a forum called PPC Coach, which was one of the original pay-per-click, you know, forums
okay.
for learning.
This was like the old days of newsgroups and things like that? Or was it a Ning or what? What?
No, it was a forum. It was just a forum, a paid forum. So okay. it was like $50 a month, I think.
Okay.
And a lot of the guys who ended up getting their own forums and, you know, went on to be big media buyers, they started in this forum.
Really?
Yeah.
Is it still around?
I believe he still has it. Will Hammerl is his name. And I know he's still running traffic. I talk to him every once in a while. It's been a while.
How do you spell his name?
Oh, man, he's going to kill me. It's like Hammeril.
That would be my guess. Okay.
Yeah. So
okay.
I believe that's it.
Cool.
And so he was kind of the originator of like, you know, we'll talk about our traffic stuff later, but we build a lot of our lists with still the strategy I learned back then with like polls and surveys and that sort of thing.
It's so funny that what's old is new and what's new is old. Mm-hmm. So I was attracted to SEO
oh,
back
right.
in the
okay.
day. And so I think it was Jeff Johnson and Dory Friend were the two mm-hmm. people that
I remember Jeff yeah.
that I got, you know, first exposed to PBNs, private blog networks and things like
yeah.
that. And so I'm in there doing that. And what attracted me to it was very engineery technical. And for some reason, I like stuff like that. So it was signing up for all these different servers and then building yeah. your WordPress sites across all the servers and then cross-linking them
sure.
so that they weren't on the same IPs.
yeah.
And it was, you know, and then you had this OpenX framework to manage everything. It was pretty crazy, but
very
it's
cool.
funny because I think you were either attracted to paid traffic or SEO or organic traffic, right?
Exactly. And what's interesting is the what attracted me to PPC, like the paid traffic back then, mm-hmm. is still what causes me trouble to this day.
Really?
Yeah, because I loved the linear aspect of it. SEO was kind of vague to me. Mm-hmm. Like I was like, so when do we ROI? When do we do this mm-hmm. and that? And it was just hard to get an answer on that.
It's a way longer process. It's kind of dumb when you can just put money out and get more money back. But
well, yeah, I mean, maybe back to then, to me back then, yes, it was. And nowadays, so we had this like glory years of, I say the golden age of media buying where you could buy traffic and you can still do this to a degree, but you buy traffic and it converts right then and there
yeah.
and you're good to go. Whereas now when you're using Facebook and for this brand where you're trying to build something out,
mm-hmm.
now you have this, they call it omni-channel, but you know,
right.
multi-touch point thing where
right.
it's, now it's hard to track like that. Right?
Yeah. So yeah. Even attribution, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And attribution is a tricky thing. We were just talking about that. It's,
yeah.
I've had to kind of relearn a lot of that and how we handle it, you know, through derivatives or whatever else. So yeah, it's interesting. But so I started there and I just started putting out campaigns and I people are like, well, how did you fund it when I started? I said, I went into debt on my credit cards.
No, also, how did you learn? Because you literally didn't know how to do this stuff, right?
No, I didn't at all. And I was in the forums and I just went through the lessons that Will had in there. And, you know, I encountered a lot of problems, obviously. And I was like, these ones don't work and this sort of thing. Right. But obviously there were guys that were doing well with it. So uh-huh. I just kept chugging away. And honestly, it just came down to starting to shift from being inside of it, because I was coming in as a consumer mindset. I didn't really learn any of this. So kind of pulling back out. And then when I'd look at ads, I'd start to think, what are they doing with the ad? Not like, what is the ad? So mm-hmm. Just trying to adjust
my
framework.
What's the distinction?
Yeah, it's a good question. Normally I'd click on the ad and then I would just see, like, you know, before I got into this stuff, you click on the ad if it catches your attention and, you know, are you interested in buying,
right,
that sort of stuff. Whereas right. now, or even, you know, when I started to make that shift, I'd read the ad in a way that, what are they trying to accomplish?
Interesting.
I guess is the best way to put it.
Give us an example of something they might be trying to accomplish.
Okay, sure. So the old famous one weird trick, you know, type
right.
ad, right?
Right?
So, you know, before I'd be like curious as in, like, what's the one weird trick? Like most people would.
Yeah.
Right? Whereas as I made the shift, it's like, you know, what's he trying to accomplish? And it is the curiosity, right? They're just trying to get that click. And then it's kind of how clickbait eventually evolved and all that sort of stuff.
Right.
So that sort of thing. And then, you know, I still use that curiosity, like going through funnels and studying the funnel and all that. But starting out, it takes a while to make that shift. And just looking at it all is learning and whatnot.
Okay. So you put up a few campaigns.
You were
finding things that worked, things that didn't. And it's kind of a numbers thing, right? You just have to do it a lot to get good at it.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's what it came down to. And I started selling more in the supplement space and that sort of stuff. And I think I had my first good campaign with some muscle building products and stuff around maybe 3 months in. So I remember the date I started really was like June 6th, 2009. Mm-hmm. I remember that because that was when I came back to Canada and I just started right away.
Okay.
Pretty much. Yeah.
Nice.
But then it was about 3-4 months later where I had my first like 6-figure campaign in terms of gross. Mm-hmm. Like I didn't manage the ROI.
And were you acting as an affiliate here, or were you so not manufacturing your own stuff and all that?
Yeah. I didn't get into e-commerce myself till 2014.
Okay.
So I was an affiliate right then and then just kept doing those campaigns. And I started an agency accidentally about 2013. Now, how that came about was 2012, I came out with a course called Traffic Black Book. Because at the time, other than that one forum, there wasn't really much. Like
a great product.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, yeah. I appreciate that.
I bought that, and I'm pretty sure you have Black Book 2 as well.
I did, yeah. Which I think was better. A lot of people liked it better.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, those are both fantastic.
I had a more of a all-star cast with that one.
You did,
know?
Yeah.
Mike
yeah.
Colella and, you know, Nana and all these guys.
Yeah,
and,
that was my list of people I wanted to follow.
Peter Nguyen. Oh,
yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah, great guys. So in that first one, it was simply driven by there wasn't a lot of training, you know, and I was like, man, why isn't there a course like this? So I did it. I came out with it. And that got me, you know, some good contacts, like guys like Ed O'Keefe, you know, Vinny Fisher. Mm-hmm. These guys approached me, and it was first Ed. Ed was the one who approached me. He's always the guy that's like—
He is, man.
He's always that first guy.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And he's always learning.
He was just at War Room and did a little traffic intensive while he was there.
Oh, so, excellent. Yeah. He told me to head out there, and I couldn't, as you know, but—
I think he's actually the last podcast I did before this one, so that's—
Oh, is that
fun.
Right?
Yeah.
Oh, excellent, yeah. So yeah, Ed's awesome. Love him. And so I started running his traffic for a product called Marine D3, which he's talked about.
He still sells.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I guess he told me this, maybe last year that we were like the biggest traffic source for him on Marine D3 for quite a while, which was pretty cool to hear.
So when you say running traffic, was that as an agency?
That was as an agency, okay. Yeah, at that point. So we had a deal structure and I was still a solo guy at that time. I didn't have any employees. And then I realized I needed some help for sure, because on the creative side of things, you know, Ed was coming to me and trusting me to like scale this thing out. Mm-hmm. And so that's where I sent out an email to the list of people who have bought Traffic Black Book. And I said,
some of you guys probably know what you're doing now.
Exactly. I was like, you know, who's interested in working on the inside and all that. I had 40, 50 applications come in. I narrowed it down to like 7 solid people.
And you had never really hired people before.
Never.
Right? So how did you go about figuring out how to do that?
You know, hiring is still a challenge for me. Like, you know, we've talked about
for almost everybody.
Yeah, that's what I hear. So, you know, I feel okay about it. But, you know, I was just like, it was driven by desperation. I was like, I need some help.
Right.
Yeah, because there was Ed and then there was another client as well. But even that, along with my affiliate campaigns, was too much workload.
Right.
Ed's thing was brand new. I knew we needed to test a lot of different creative angles. So I just thought, I don't know where to find people. I'm just going to email my list.
That's smart.
Yeah. Well,
because they were exactly the skill set people that you needed, right?
Yeah, no.
They were doing the things that you needed.
For sure.
You're doing the same thing.
It was probably a tip I heard from somebody. So if I'm forgetting, sorry. but it was probably something I picked up. And then I narrowed it down. Now, the one guy who I hired, his name's Chris Nikra. He's still with us.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So he's just a total rock star. He runs that business almost entirely.
Is there a name for the agency?
Yeah, DSV2.
Okay.
Media. Yeah. And DSV2.com is the URL.
Okay.
And so he runs that side, my publishing, you know, the affiliate business and that sort of thing. What I did is in those final five, seven guys, I told them, okay, this is a campaign we're promoting. It was actually Ed's.
So yeah.
I don't know if Ed knows this, but
that's okay. Awesome.
And I said, I want you guys to give me 4 banner ads each. And I put them into a live media buy. We were doing buys
on. So you picked 7 people, did you say, right?
Yeah.
Say 28 banner ads.
Exactly.
Okay.
You got it. Yeah. So we did a buy on, I think at the time it was maybe yahoo.com, like just the run of site, you know, mm-hmm. display type thing. Mm-hmm. And Chris did the worst out of all of them.
That's really funny.
Yeah, which is funny.
Of course, my partner did the worst. No.
But, you know, he did the worst, but at the same time, he was super hungry and really keen to learn and all that sort of stuff. And he had a full-time job still, but we took him on, we just made it work. And then he helped alleviate so much because when we launched for Ed, we launched, you know, 50 new banner ads. That would have been me doing it.
Right.
Yeah. And so he started doing that. He started doing the creative stuff. And now, I mean, he's evolved into a guy who he knows more about the email side of the business than I do, like granularly. So, you know, he trained, you know, one of our new guys, Max. So Max is like his Chris to me. So it's really cool. Yeah. So.
What does a launch look like? So when you go into something like that, would you do it differently today or would you do pretty much the same thing?
You know, it's a little bit different today, but really it comes down to finding the creatives that work.
Okay. First and by all. Creative, for people that don't know what that is.
So the in that case, it was banner ads.
Yeah.
So these days, somebody says creative, it could be Facebook video ad, it could be a Facebook image ad, it could be, you know, a Google ad, whatever. But typically that's your ad, your banners.
Do you use those all kind of equally? Or is there one that you lean towards?
In terms of traffic sources.
Mm-hmm. Or types of ads?
Yeah. These days for, let's say, the e-commerce brand in the car space, it's video ads on Facebook is our awareness platform. And what I mean by that is that's how people end up finding out about us first.
Okay.
There and then organic reviews on YouTube is a big one for us.
But, are there tools that you like for either of those things?
Yeah. You know, for the video production, I tend to outsource a lot of that.
Yeah.
Right
now.
Do
you do like iPhone style or more produced?
We've done both.
Okay.
Yeah, we've done both. So we find in our market, the car market, they don't necessarily need to be very produced.
Yeah.
You know, and it also depends. Like, so if we're doing something that's a testimonial mashup or something like that, that's going to be customers, you know, doing it with their phone. Yep. Right. And we've put out some really highly produced, like you're familiar with like the purple mattress type stuff and that sort of thing. We've put out creatives like that. You know, we found they don't necessarily, for us, pull better on conversion, but they get a great amount of organic engagement. They're funny and that sort of thing. And then that allows us to build that relationship a little bit more. So, but we do it, you know, all across the spectrum. It just really depends, you know, the angle we're taking on a promotion. Yeah.
Okay. Sure. So then hopping back. So, and let's do now just so we have the most up-to-date things.
For sure.
Your product would be a great thing. And I try not to ask too many compound questions, but there's so many things I want to ask you.
Sure. Yeah.
So is it different for launching an e-commerce product than, say, an info e-learning kind of product? Or is it pretty much the same on the traffic side?
So I find that the e-commerce sort of thing, for us anyway, comes down a lot to demonstration, right? So especially in the car care market, these are DIY guys. They want to see things working. But in general,
it's that kind of that way on the info side too, though, right? If you're selling something designed to help somebody get a result, the best thing that you can do is show them.
I guess, yeah. Right. So the bit of the instruction, have them get a result early on. And then from there, they're like, oh, okay, there's probably more results I can get. Yeah. So I guess, yeah, that makes sense. I found on the info side, I don't do a lot of info stuff for other people. It's been a long time, in fact. Yeah. But I know for myself, a lot of it had to do with the reputational aspects. And I was given a lot of value and whatnot in forums and everything. So when I released my product, I already had a bit of that reputation.
Sure.
And these days, it's so much easier to build audience comparatively.
Right.
You know, as you know, you got Facebook, Instagram, and now you got Snap and all this stuff. So there's so many ways you can build influence. It makes it more competitive, but, you know, there's always going to be an audience that resonates with your message, especially on the info side.
Okay, cool. So then let's go to, you're launching the product that you're going to do now, your product. You just did that a year ago, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
So what do you do? How do you go about that?
Yeah. So you know what worked well for us is we started to bid on, because to me, Google search always has the best buyer intent traffic, like bar none, right?
Right.
So I think it'd always be like that. So what we did actually is before we started on Facebook, I started to bid on competitor terms, but not just competitor terms, just relevant.
Competitor terms are brands or?
Yeah, it could be that, or it could just be like somebody typing in, you know, best car wax.
Okay.
Or best something like that.
Okay.
Right?
Like comparative terms, that kind of stuff.
Exactly. Okay. Yeah. That sort of stuff. Or even just like car sealant, buy car sealant stuff.
Okay.
Yeah. Really high consumer intent, right?
Okay.
And we would attach, you know, Google Analytics UTM parameters. You guys are familiar with those?
Just a brief thing for anybody that doesn't understand that.
Yeah.
I know that's a whole course, but.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. So this is actually kind of an advanced strategy, but you asked me. So
I like it. No, it's great.
So the UTM basically just allows us to see where the traffic came from.
So there it's kind of a tracking type thing.
Exactly.
Right?
Okay.
Okay. So now you're buying buyer intent traffic.
Exactly.
The UTM goes on the website, some code that you put on the website, it's something that you put in the ad that Google lets you do or what?
Yeah, inside the ad that Google allows us to do.
Okay.
And then, you know, our tracking systems get to see like, okay, the traffic came from there.
And when you say tracking systems, that's basically Google or that's
Google Analytics. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Great. And then Facebook's Pixel allows us to do it to a degree.
Okay.
So what we end up doing then is Facebook has custom audiences, which, you know, most people are familiar with. And all we do is we create a custom audience based on that tracking term that comes in.
So walk me through an example. Let's just make up a tracking term.
Okay. So it could be
bi-sealant.
Bi-sealant. Okay. Exactly. And then in Facebook, we will set up the audience so that whenever Facebook sees the term bi-sealant come into our website, it'll create an audience of those people.
Great. Which is super, super smart. So
exactly.
So just so I understand kind of the flow of it, you say, okay, I'm going to go to Google search. Mm-hmm. I'm going to buy a search ad. Mm-hmm. I'm going to bid on that. It's going to be bi-sealant.
Yeah.
I'm going to design my creative, which is just basically the ad.
Yeah.
Right. And in that ad, I'm going to, where they allow me to place this tracking thing, the UTM thing,
exactly.
I'm going to put that there.
Yeah.
Then somebody's going to click on the ad. Mm-hmm. And then there's also a Facebook pixel, or how do we get into that group being created?
So when somebody clicks on the ad, they go to the website, so our e-commerce site, and on our site, there's the Facebook pixel in the code, right?
Right. And a Google Pixel too, I'm guessing, right?
Google Pixel as well and all that.
Anything else that you put there?
We have Google Analytics, right, for our analytics engine. And then any other traffic source that I might be using, so Pinterest or whatever else, I'm going to have the Pinterest pixels in there as well.
Got it.
But those are the big ones, the Google Pixel and the Facebook Pixel.
Okay. So now from the Facebook Pixel, what happens to get this group happening?
Okay, great. So Facebook kind of looks at that and sees people coming in on that, you know, UTM that we talked about.
Right.
And it starts to build the audience based off that, right? Facebook's pixel is always collecting data. So, you know, I could split it however many ways I want, but, but you know, in this case,
you're splitting it by search terms, right?
Exactly.
So, okay. So now you've got buy sealant, buy wax, protect paint,
exactly,
that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Now what happens?
So then we build what's called a lookalike audience on Facebook. So anytime you have that custom audience, you can now in real time build the lookalike audience.
Right.
So what ends up happening effectively is you're building out this lookalike audience of people with really high consumer intent.
Right.
And this is something I shared at Ed's
traffic
event.
Cluster.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it works really well to get a little more buyer intent, but on Facebook.
Okay.
Which tends to be, you know, people aren't on Facebook to buy stuff. We always hear that, right? So it gives us just the best opportunity when launching a product on Facebook, I find, to get a bit better quality of traffic, you know, so that you can better chance of converting, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then at that point, it just comes down to, you know, launching the ads and, you know, that's like a whole thing, you know, but we like to do typically video ads if it's a demonstrative type product.
Mm-hmm.
And it also depends on what the landing page is like. You know, we're sending to just our standard Shopify type, you know, e-commerce page.
So this will be the second time they're hitting a landing page though, right? They,
exactly,
because they clicked on the first thing. What does the first landing page look like? What's your objective there? You already told us it's to pixel them, right, in all those places.
Yeah.
But what is the user experience at the you know, or the customer experience at that time that they land? What are they finding out when they land?
You know, we send them, because they're pretty consumer intent, buyer intent terms, we send them right to our e-commerce, just our listing, like our product listing on the site. And we've tested like to the homepage or a custom landing page. But at the end of the day, it's just...
So that's their first opportunity to buy then,
that's the
right?
first opportunity
to
buy.
So the ad itself is saying, looking for sealant, basically.
Exactly.
So obviously, it's better than that. But looking for sealant here, right? Or as Frank would say, y'all want some sealant?
Y'all want some sealant, yeah.
And then they go to the page and it's like, here's your sealant. Yeah. And is that page on Amazon? Is it on Shopify?
For us, it's Shopify.
Shopify?
Yeah, okay. Exactly.
Great. Then you do plan all the pixels. Then you go over to Facebook, create the custom and the lookalike audiences, and now you're running ads that are similar probably to the first one that they saw, right?
Well, now, you know, with Facebook, we can do video, we can explain it more.
So now you're demonstrating the product
more.
Now
we're demonstrating it more.
Okay.
You know, we can get into that whole system of it if you like. But
I would love to.
Yeah, absolutely. So top of funnel, middle funnel, bottom funnel, you've probably heard of that. But anyway, this would be considered top of funnel, which is the first ad that somebody sees outside of Google.
Yep.
So that's going to be demonstrative typically. Mm-hmm. And we'll get sales off of that. We'll get sales off that initial Google click too.
This is kind of the discovery awareness phase, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So that's kind of where we'll go right there. And then, you know, at that point, I mean, media buying is a whole other 10 podcasts. But it, you know, so that's essentially our
Speaking
awareness.
Of which, is there a Black Book 3 in the future?
I'm not sure. If it was, it would have to do more with like probably logistics and back end and all that. But I don't know. I've thought of it.
Should people buy Black Book 2 still? Is it still pretty?
Black Book 2 is obviously the Facebook and Google, like the dashboards and the way those are run have changed dramatically. But the conceptual idea of how to buy media and like how to psychologically approach it is all very much still relevant. The direct to site buying stuff is still relevant.
Yeah.
The email buying stuff is still relevant.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, it is relevant. There's some great Facebook courses out there right now. So,
In particular that you're super enamored with?
Yeah. One that's really good is, Dipesh Mandalia.
Really?
Yeah. He has a, I don't even know the name of it. Like, well, it's like,
D-E-P-E-C-H-E-S-H.
And then
E-S-H, okay.
Yeah, and then Mandalia, M-A-N-D-A-L-I-A.
I think that we should argue for all of these people, like the first guy and that you mentioned, which was Hemerl, I think.
Yeah, Will Hemerl.
And,
yeah.
And this guy, they need to change their names to like Bob Smith Traffic, because then it's going to be easier to find these guys, right?
For sure,
it's way too challenging.
No, absolutely.
Okay, so now we are talking about the top of the funnel and the demonstrative things. Mm-hmm. Some people buy there, some people don't. Do they see the same ad again, or do you do something different?
Yeah. So then there's called, you know, middle funnel. So these people, they're aware of us at this point.
We call it the consideration phase, right?
Consideration. Yeah. So at middle of funnel, we'll often use the same ad that we did at top of funnel, but we'll also start rolling in testimonials and that sort of stuff.
So social proof.
Social proof. Exactly. Okay. And in our case, we have a lot of them, but when we were starting out, we didn't. Mm-hmm. So it was just a matter of those early adopters, those early buyers and whatnot that took a chance on us. We just reached out and see if they would be willing to
or give 100 copies or 100 samples of your product away to people and say, I'm giving it to you because I want your honest opinion as to whether it works or not. And then, right. So it's not hard to collect those.
No, it's not hard.
That shouldn't be something that stops people.
Absolutely not. Yeah. Especially if the product, you know, lives up to the claims and all that, it should be no issue.
Anything else besides the testimonials and demonstration?
Those are, for us, that's what we tend to use in middle funnel and then top of funnel as well. Middle funnel, we may sometimes do a creative that's similar to the other ones, but that offers a discount, right? We might offer a coupon code.
Okay.
And that depends on the product. In our space, we're a bit higher priced. Mm-hmm. So sometimes we'll do that where in the middle funnel, maybe the second or third ad that they see in there, we might say, okay, hey, you know, twisted my arm type. Well, we don't use that, that verbiage, but that sort of thing.
Or flash sale or holiday or some excuse.
Flash sale,
to do
all
it,
that
right?
sort of stuff. Exactly.
Yeah. Okay.
And then after they've engaged with that, and when we say engage, that could be clicking, right? Which is some of the highest engagement next to when they click add to cart.
Clicking
or
meaning that they clicked on the web page lander.
Exactly.
To add to cart.
Exactly. Or, okay. Yeah. So we start.
But didn't buy.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay. So we start to do retargeting and follow up on those people in a certain way. Mm-hmm. But at that point, if somebody's, you know, hit add to cart and they just didn't complete the purchase, we'll show often our bottom of funnel ads, which are a lot of times just the dynamic Facebook product ad, because they're already...
What is that, just so people understand?
Sure, yeah. So Facebook's product ads, they basically tie into your product catalog on Facebook. And, you know, Facebook allows you to upload your products and all that. So if you've ever seen a Facebook ad where it's just basically products on a white background, that tends to be the dynamic product ad.
Right. And it's dynamic based on what they've shown interest in before. Right?
Exactly. Yeah. Somebody add to cart or whatever else.
Right.
So that tends to be the stuff that sweeps up the bottom, right? You know, it works well. The challenge we find these days is the top of funnel, because in our space, it's a crowded space, right? But lots of spaces these days are crowded because it's never been easier to get something up and going. Right.
Right. Yeah. No kidding. Yeah.
So that tends to be the challenge. And longer cycle.
So how do you stand out?
For us, you know, it's interesting. I used to hear a lot like, you know, the product doesn't really matter and that sort of thing. In our case, that's actually how we stood out, was side-by-side demonstrations that customers have done organically.
Yeah.
So that actually helped us. So we don't actually profit on our top of funnel stuff on Facebook these days.
Do you go negative?
We do go negative a bit. Yeah. And the company doesn't go negative, but the campaigns do. Like if I showed you my, and we're working on improving it at all times, but if I showed you my Facebook ad manager for this business, it wouldn't be impressive at all, right? But the company as a whole is profitable.
Well, it's a LTV thing, right? So the lifetime value of the customer versus the immediate customer value and the average order value and all that stuff.
Exactly. Yeah. So there's the LTV of our existing customers, and we have a pretty high repurchase rate, but there's also... A lot of these guys, they're researchers, you know, DIYers and whatnot. They're researchers.
Right.
So they see it. They're like, you know, I don't know.
Maybe.
Then they go search in YouTube or Google. And that's actually where we get a lot of referral traffic from YouTube. Yeah. Okay. So people end
Is
up seeing.
Referral traffic, how do you define that?
We can see in our Google Analytics that I mentioned before that the person's, the sale or the traffic is coming from YouTube.
And that's a point of last, the attribution. Is that what that means to you, or just that they've been there? Or
yeah. So it'll be the last touch point in Google Analytics. Now, the challenge that I was saying before these days is a lot of times we won't know what the last touch point was.
Right, right.
It'll just say not set.
Okay.
I don't know if you know Jared Kroslow, really smart marketer. He's like semi-retired now. I always joke about that.
Kroslow.
He had an offer in the nootropic, like the brain space.
Yeah, yeah.
Around the same time, like his was probably the next biggest one we did after Ed's as an agency.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, so really good copywriter, great offer structure guy and smart guy. And I actually just talked to him a couple weeks ago and he helped me with some stuff. And I said, how did you handle this attribution stuff? Did you ever deal with this? Because a lot of his was direct response. He's like, no, we actually did deal with it a lot. And he gave me a tip of using derivatives. So basically if you have 10% of sales coming in that you don't know where they came from, he would just add 10% across the board.
Okay. So slice the not set across every source.
Across and
then
everything.
Then you don't know, but at least there's some,
exactly,
you know, some idea.
Some correlation.
Okay. That's fair.
And I mean, there's guys that say use programs like Wicked Reports and all that sort of stuff, but I haven't seen a lot of where attribution's completely black and white these days.
Okay.
Because you'll have two platforms saying they got the sale.
Right.
You know, Facebook and Google.
Right.
No, I got
the sale. They both want it. Yeah,
they both
exactly.
want it. Yeah. So it does, it throws a wrench into things. It's a little different than back then, but when you're trying to build a brand, you just kind of have to watch the numbers overall, and it's a little trickier for sure.
Okay. So you've got, your email is a big thing for you still, right?
For sure.
And is email mostly for follow-up sales after you've done all the stuff that we've just talked about?
For sure. In this market, for example, the car care market, our email is abandoned cart. So somebody adds the cart, they don't buy, we'll give them a follow-up. It's for existing customers. So we drive a lot of sales on the back end off of email, that sort of stuff. It's follow-up. In my publishing business, we have like an internal list of like 675,000 people, but we also purchase email from publishers.
Okay.
Yeah. So,
a lot of people don't know that that works. And I want to ask you about that.
For sure.
But what I'm after here is, what percentage of your total revenue for the company, let's say net sales, comes from these initial funnel sales versus following up after? And if you know, what comes from the first touch?
Yeah, it's tricky.
And then from the retargeting, I'll just say from the retargeting.
Yeah.
And then from the follow-up. Just curious if you've broken that down.
For sure.
To see what percentages look like.
So if I'm to look at just straight numbers, so Klaviyo is the email platform that we use for this product. If I was to look at just the numbers, like this is the revenue Klaviyo shows, and then this is our total revenue for the month, we're usually between 30 and 40% email.
Okay.
Just back in email
and
traffic.
And that would be follow-up based on what we just talked about.
Pretty much, yeah. Okay. There's nothing cold off that. Okay. So it's either abandoned carts or we're re-engaging old customers for new stuff and that sort of thing, which is pretty considerable since we really only have two main products. Mm-hmm. We're rolling out more soon, but so that's kind of a testament to the repurchase rate and all that.
Are they cross-sell emails as well? Like you enjoyed, you know, product A, you should definitely try product B.
Exactly. Okay. Yeah. So we have that and we bring that in, but really with two main products and then just bundles based off that, you're kind of limited, right?
Yeah.
But there's a lot of people that have more SKUs and more products and they can do that all day long, right?
Do you do affiliate marketing on those follow-ups as well? So once somebody's already a customer and they bought all the products you have, are you still monetizing some other way or do you just kind of want to hold on to them?
Yeah, right now we want to just hold on to them.
Okay.
We're not doing affiliate marketing.
Okay.
There's a few products out there that are like not competitive that we could. I'm not like fully convinced on the quality and whatnot. So I just don't want to.
So you're taking care of your customer.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So what we did to plan out our next few products, we just surveyed our list and we gave them a few options and then we said other if there's anything else. And luckily the top two, you know, ones that were requested were the ones we had in the works already.
Nice.
Yeah. Before I got the bright idea to like survey them, I was we were like, okay, we're going to go all in on these. And then thankfully they were the first two.
Would you please confirm that I made the right decision?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So 30% from email. So the other 70%, do you know how that kind of breaks down between all the retargeting and the just the straight buy my stuff ads?
Yeah. So this is kind of tricky because when we look at Google Analytics, they have what's called a time decay attribution. So I'll try to explain this, but basically it shows you, let's say 70% of people purchase the first day they engage with us. They'll come to our website. Mm-hmm. And then it starts to show you the drop off like day two, day three, day four, there's all that sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. So over 30 days. So when we've done this analysis in Google Analytics, they say that 70%, like it's like 72% of our people purchase the first time they see us.
Got it. Okay.
Right. I don't necessarily know that that's accurate.
Right.
Right. But then, you know, the other remaining 30%
you know, it can't be accurate because if 30% buy from email, then
exactly.
Right.
So this is the challenge we're kind of dealing with, right?
Yeah,
whereas Facebook says, you know, I would say it's like 40% of total sales are converting right off the hop on Facebook.
Okay. Do you have a feel for it? Just if you were going to kind of,
I actually say that Facebook's 40 or so is fairly accurate.
And that 40 is all because you start on Google.
Well,
you also start on Facebook.
Yeah, we have Google campaigns run all the time, but a lot of it now these days is a lot of branding related stuff, right?
Okay.
We don't do a lot of the competitor stuff and you know, the best car seal anymore.
So why would you stop if it worked before? Why wouldn't you do both?
Because the audiences are still building up,
right?
So we had the lookalike audience. We just needed a certain amount. And it's a good suggestion because we are planning to do that again, right?
Okay.
But I would recommend having it there. Those terms tend to get expensive, so you need to watch the amount that you're sending based on that. Otherwise, our typical awareness is on Facebook. And so we have to attribute a lot of our sales to Facebook because in a lot of ways, people wouldn't have known about us or at a scale out and known about us at a larger scale if we weren't doing the Facebook.
So do you have a feel then just generally how many people buy the first time they see this is a cool thing and then go to the lander versus how many are purchasing through retargeting, meaning that they've already been to the lander one time.
For sure. Yeah. If we were to put Facebook by itself to just look at Facebook and, you know, only look at Facebook purchases, we're probably at the last I checked, we're around 45 to 50% of people are at the bottom of funnel stage.
Okay. So they've seen something already more than once.
Yeah. They've gone through it. Yeah, exactly. Right. And then 25 to 30 is on the middle funnel. So the top of funnel tends not to convert, you know, right off the bat. So you would by far see the most sales and the lowest cost per sale at the bottom funnel.
Yeah. So the reason that I wanted to hammer on that for a minute was that I think a lot of people throw an ad up and say, buy my car sealant.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're like, oh, that didn't work.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, then you're missing out on probably 90 to 95% of your buyers because meaning that the ad spend that you did initially to get them in and get them pixeled is going to go to waste if you're not pixeling, if you're not following up. And then another 50% comes down at the very bottom of the funnel after they've seen it at least twice.
Yeah.
And then another 30% comes from follow-up.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's important for people to know, because that's the difference in making a business and not making a business. And a lot of people that start out, it's just like, and even people that are like, I can't crack Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this is why, right? Yeah, you have to do all that stuff.
And you know, there's another side of like, if I can go into this
in
more detail, it depends on the goals of the business. If the business is the goal just to make money and get sales, you can do that off of the top of funnel. Mm-hmm. And the biggest spenders that I know on Facebook, because I still have all my affiliate contacts, I know a lot of dropshipper guys, they're affiliates and dropshippers that don't really retarget much.
Right.
They have to make money day zero. They don't have a follow-up.
Right.
Right. And they're the biggest spenders. I mean, the guys spending six figures a day.
So what do they do differently?
Very aggressive creatives.
Okay.
Yeah. So that tends to be it. Or
very aggressive, meaning a little over the line on the claims, or
over the line on the claims. Okay. The other thing that an affiliate, and here's just a thing, like the other thing that affiliates have a benefit of is an offer that converts really well. They're not the ones doing, creating the offer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as you know, creating the offer is a whole other thing, right?
Yeah.
It's not easy to do. It's probably the hardest part of marketing is create an irresistible offer.
Right. And actually have a good product too. That's what I see. Lots of irresistible offers for crappy products.
Exactly. Yeah. So, but you know, a lot of times affiliates don't care about that so much, but a lot of the white hat affiliates, which I mean the guys doing like, you know, good e-commerce products and whatnot, they're still dealing with something that's been heavily optimized.
Correct.
And it's converting well. So it's actually easier in a lot of ways, but you don't have that follow-up and you're not essentially building anything. Mm-hmm. So it can be good for cash flow, but it's a much more linear kind of path, right?
Cool.
Dropshippers, the same type of thing. A lot of those guys don't do a lot of follow-up, the ones I know that spend a lot, but they do like heavy discounts in their creatives and they're usually promoting something that's a really hot trend and then it's going to die off.
And they're not building a brand.
Exactly. Yeah. I know some guys that do build brands around the dropshipping, but I think it's like one out of 10 of the guys that I know doing volume, right? And they're one of the bigger volume ones because they can keep rolling out to their existing customer base. So they're doing it how I would say right, you know?
Okay.
But when you're trying to build a brand out properly longer term, you're typically not going to be able to push that envelope on claims and whatnot off the top unless you really invented like, you know, something just phenomenal.
Mm.
Like for example, it's on Facebook somewhere. There's a treadmill that's, you know, treadmill desks that people walk on their desk.
Yeah.
Well, there's one that somebody invented where it's really light and thin, but can handle someone up to 300 pounds. I wish I could remember the name. And you can just pull it out and store it away. And I'm going to get one.
Like,
I used to have a treadmill desk, but it was clunky and it was this thing. And
and
you couldn't move it and sit down if you wanted. But those guys, even them, like, I mean, there's tons of engagement, you know, top of funnel and that sort of stuff. I bet they get a lot of sales just to how visually impressive it is.
Yeah.
But still, there's a lot of retargeting. I've been retargeted a lot off their stuff. So I found that, you know, building that true brand, a lot of people, they don't know who you are. And these days there's so many random advertising, you know, there's ads and all the sort of stuff you see on Facebook. That trust has to be built over time, right? And that comes with the top of funnel stuff these days. I'll tell you what we're doing going forward is we're going to try more and more, try to get, you know, experiential feel good type ads.
Give me an example.
Yeah. So, you know, like things that resonate to the audience. Like, so for the guys in the car care space, we might not be selling the product too hard in that top one. We're more going to sell the feel and the emotion of like working on the car, because this is something that's very specific to these guys, right? So like working on it, the type of person they are to do that sort of thing.
Let's make an ad up right here. What are we going
to
do?
Yeah. I'm going to try not to like,
give my hooks and stuff.
But I know somebody's going to do this now, but it's fine. You know, so it's kind of focusing on, well, basically like, you know, you're the type of guy that likes control of what he's doing, you know, do that sort of thing. And, you know, I'm going to try to think, you got me on the spot.
So let me see if I can help you, because there was an ad that was a fake ad, but I thought it was amazing. There are two of them. One was in Mad Men. They did one for the Kodak Carousel.
Okay.
I don't know if you watched that, but basically if you Google Kodak Carousel, Mad Men, it's a very moving thing. They're trying to figure out how to sell this slide carousel that you hit the button and it changes the slides.
Mm-hmm.
And the ad isn't anything about the features and benefits of the slide thing. It's about the memories that it creates. And so it's, you know, that's the idea. So it shows a family watching the stuff as a voiceover talks about that. Another one was in a movie called What Women Want with Mel Gibson. where he was an ad man and they're doing an ad for
Nike. I remember that movie.
They open and they're talking about the road doesn't care that you blah, blah, blah. The road doesn't care. And then it's just, you know, something Nike, right?
Exactly.
Is that the kind of thing that you're talking about? That feeling, that emotional driving type ad?
Exactly. Similar to that.
Have to give away your...
Thank you. I appreciate that. No, that, but you verbalized it much better than I was.
Cool.
So yeah, something like that. And then at that point, you know, Facebook gives you the option to, you know, retarget and follow up with people that have watched X percent of the video, you know, with 25, 50%, 75%.
Right.
So
are there magic numbers there?
I like to focus on the ones that are 50% and above.
That makes sense.
Personally. So, you know, at that point, we'll retarget people who have engaged and watched that video. And the video is usually only going to be 30 to 45 seconds long for Facebook, that top of funnel one. And then, you know, people have watched 50% plus. That's when we're going to get into the demonstrative stuff because we know they're interested in that sort of thing. They've already got an affinity.
So you're going even more top of funnel. You're kind of going emotional top of funnel.
Yeah, exactly. But now we have the demonstrative stuff with our product and that sort of thing.
Down lower, though.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So, cool. And we'll also use that demonstrative or comparison type video top of funnel as well for some conversion stuff. Because right now the balance for us is like I self-fund everything myself. And I try to always treat this one as its startup. Like I invested funds myself to get it going,
right.
But I try to get it self-sustaining as soon as possible. So I have to kind of, in parallel, run the ones that are going to, you know, convert a little bit sooner, maybe demonstrative and that sort of thing to a very specific audience or, you know, get into this casting the wider net.
And is that through your segmenting? So the people that have buy sealant, for example, are getting the demonstrative and the people that are just sealant or types of sealant or things like that, more informational seekers, that would be the...
The guys getting the more experiential, feel-good type video, that's going to be pretty broad. So we might target it out to just DIYers in general.
Car enthusiasts.
Exactly, yeah. So so we're just trying to get that psychological hook and see who it resonates with.
Do you sort down by brand? Like, have you found that... Corvette owners are more likely to be car people than Kia owners or anything like that.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, more likely to be buying the stuff that you're selling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we do like in our ad sets inside Facebook, we split that all up. Okay. So
do you do like dynamic insertion ads for the brands and things like that?
We actually just don't use them dynamic. We just actually
put it
into the ad. Okay. Yeah. So we've also had like Facebook's targeting isn't perfect because we've also had people go, well, I don't own a Jeep. You know, well,
right. Yeah.
And they were like, Jeep owners love it.
Those are kind of hateful, but a lot of those people too. They're like, why are you showing me this?
Yeah, well, you know, some people just get a little crazy. In our markets, it's not too bad.
Okay.
Unless we try to push the envelope on some.
Okay. So I want to jump to one of the things you said earlier was that your product is a little more expensive than some of the others. So you've decided to take the premium pricing instead of the discount pricing, which I think is only smart 100% of the time. well, because otherwise you're in a race to the bottom, right?
Sure.
You're a race to perfect competition, which is the place where nobody makes any money because we've all priced ourselves down to cost, basically.
True,
so what drove that decision and are you happy with it? And what are your thoughts on that premium versus lower end model?
What drove it to it? Well, I was kind of looking at what was in the market. I mean, I think that's kind of usually where you start. And I knew the results of our product versus some of the other ones that were pricey. And we were at least on par, but we were usually better. So I said, and my mind as an affiliate is typically programmed to doing the cheaper stuff, right? Just churn and burn and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So it was a big fight for me to kind of like, because I see a lot of our competitors, they started dropping their prices, right? Because we were beating the brakes off them on, you know, comparisons. So they started dropping the price. So I know they're going to get... It was just a lot of it's been faith to kind of just like keep that higher price point. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the number one, not complaint, but the number one objection we get is it's expensive, right? But then there's also other brands out there that are more expensive. And so those are the guys we're trying to get, you know, and they're bigger brands than us. And what we usually hear from their customers when they come over to us is, I can't believe your product is more affordable and it's better.
Right.
And those are the guys that we want to get. So we've been...
It's the ultimate testimonial, right?
Exactly. So we've been trying to move our messaging over to that. And we're not going to play, you know, the race to the bottom game. You know, it's just not... So it was... I just kind of needed to do that too in terms of where I wanted to take the brand and that sort of thing. And we have some other products that are not as pricey, right? You know, we have some other ones that... Because, you know, it's only so much like if it's a tire shine product or something like... Something you can go to AutoZone and just get a really good one. You know, there's only so much you can do to compete with that, right? But we take a stance with our soap product, our sealant. You know, we have a ceramic coating coming out, like a true ceramic coating. We took the stance on those being middle to upper range pricing, more upper range pricing. So, yeah.
So one more pricing question.
Sure.
A lot of pricing studies that I've seen show that a good, better, best lineup within the same brand, or at least within the offer, it could be your brand, but there's an overarching brand that's the holding company, let's say. It's, you know, Sealants Inc. And then you've got Gold Seal and Platinum Seal and Copper Seal, let's say. And then if you've got only one product that you're selling and it's a premium product, then that's good. But better is to have two because it will allow people to make a decision between the two. But if you really want people to buy the middle one, then you should have three. Yep. Because they look at the lower end one and say, ah, that's not really what I want for. And they're like, oh, but that high one, that's super expensive. But a percentage of the people will buy the high one. You know, I'm a high end buyer. I'm just like, you know, I want the best thing, right? But then a lot more people will gravitate towards that middle one if you show them three. You can do that with competitors in comparison on your own thing and say, here are the super premiums that really there are no, what's your product price at?
Ours right now is about $40 for a 16-ounce bottle.
And the super premium people, what do they charge?
So let me do one that's a more direct comparison. Okay. We have like a package, right? And that's close to 50. And then the more premium in terms of the price point, not the product, the price point is probably 58 to 60.
Okay.
Right.
So I'll use that as an example that I'm going to use a more crass example because it's just easy to understand, right? There are $5,000 hookers.
Okay.
And there are $20 hookers. And somebody who was a very smart business mentor to me said one time, there are no $5,000 hookers. There are only $5,000 Johns. And what that means is that there is a buyer that just wants to pay
the most,
the most because they want the best. And they don't want to go through the process of doing the research. And they're just going to take a shot that the super premium is the best, right? So if you offer the super premium and Starbucks, the example is the espresso machine, the $5,000 espresso machine. They've got one in there. Almost nobody buys it, but somebody does.
Yeah.
But the fact that they have it, when you're in there looking at it, you're like, that's really cool.
Yeah.
Now somebody's going to buy it and that's cool, you know, win, right? But not enough to drive the business. But what that's going to do is it's going to place in the buyer's head, the prospect's head, that 5,000 number. And I've even seen tests where like walking into a presentation, there's something on the wall that has a number that's completely unrelated. 20 million trees will die this year. But you're going in to find out about cars. But in your mind, without you even realizing it, that 20 million is there. So you go in and when they say, this is $5,000, you're like, more people are going to buy that.
Interesting.
It's unrelated, right?
Yeah. I'm going to go test my headlines.
You really, and that pricing structure too. And I would test like yours, if you've got a range of levels of product, I would test that. And then I would test the competitions.
Yeah.
And 58 versus 50 is not much, right? But if there was one that was, let's say, 78, now you've got 78, 58, and then whatever the cheapest one that everybody knows is horrible. And if they've got the choice of seeing those three things or even comparing those three things, and I've seen it from newspapers to everything you can think of, they will buy more and more and more of that mid-level because it just places in their mind a context.
Yeah.
So something to think about.
Well, so the way that we've kind of done that messaging is we put a comparison to high-end ceramic coating, which might be $2,000 or whatever.
Sweet. Right? So that's an apples to oranges comparison, but so great for anchoring them to the 2K.
Exactly. Yeah. And then, you know, there's that, well, now you got to hire a professional to do it, blah, blah, this and that. It's a longer curing time, all this sort of stuff. Well, you can have ours. It's X amount. It lasts, you know, these 6 months or whatever it is, and then that's it. And we also, you know, we've been identifying this, so we have like two new products come out that one will be the lower and one is the upper, which our own ceramic coating. And so yeah, same type of thing. We have that multi-tier sort of stuff. And they can actually go all together in one bundle. Yeah, so I'm not going to say more on that. Yeah, I like that.
Bundling is a good thing.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, cool. Anything that I didn't ask you, I know that we could do 10 podcasts on traffic and all the cool stuff, but anything that I didn't ask you that you think would be exceptionally helpful for people as they're considering paid traffic campaigns and things like that?
Yeah. So the first thing I always tell people is just, let's say they want to sell their own product. I always say like, just choose one traffic source to start with, even though, you know, I did discuss the multi-channel attribution and everything. It can be pretty overwhelming when you have to start dealing with different things. So I always say to start with like one traffic source, the traffic source that fits your audience best. Now, that being said, Facebook can fit almost any audience. So getting good at Facebook is great, but I will say that if you have a product that fits the demographics of Pinterest, that's a good one to look at. Mm-hmm. Pinterest, less competition, of course, but there's more intent, like buyer intent there, actually.
It's a pretty high qualified demographic in terms of income and things like that too, right?
It is. Yeah, absolutely. And they, the thing is, people are there, they're pinning stuff that they want to go back and like learn more about after. So when you think of it psychologically, it's not as much interruption marketing because the ads actually look like pins.
Right.
Yeah. So it's, you know, our product, we're going to do some testing there. It's not quite congruent, but it's a small audience of, you know, car
guys. I would think I would think that people who are pinning car pictures and things like that would be potential prospects. Right?
Exactly. And we're going to test it out fairly soon, but especially in the younger women's markets, that sort of stuff, or younger to, you know, middle-aged women's markets, I think there's a lot of potential there for awareness and, but for conversion as well. I think I saw a study, there was some solid data showing that like 46% of people are on Pinterest are most likely to use Pinterest to find something to purchase.
Yeah. And now you have, I forget what they call them. There's I think three types of ads on Pinterest, but it's actually visual shopping. So they can click and go straight to the e-com, right?
Yeah. I think they've done a great job with harnessing that intent. And then, you know, we got a rep at Pinterest and, you know, the video ads are just now rolling out. You know, so I think there's a good early
Their ads to me are generally, I find, ahead of the others. Like they've really put the time in, you know, into that. So that if they there's a picture of a car and a person there standing with it, you can click and buy the car, you can click and buy the tires, or you can buy the sealant that they're putting on, right? Yeah. It's amazingly smart.
It is very smart. Yeah. And again, there's just that intent of the user that's on there. I think that's super powerful. But, you know, when people ask me, like, what's one traffic source to focus on? I mean, you can't really go wrong with Facebook. Just know that it's a monster. It's a beast to kind of harness and work with. It's a complex system. But to simplify that, I always say, other than picking the one traffic source, get good at your creative, the ad. That's the biggest hinge of, like, everything. And it's just old, you know, it's psychology. Like, all these platforms change all the time, but human psychology, we're slow and we're, you know, we still have our, you know, our lizard brain kind of dictates things that we do. So the creative is the number one thing. And so whether it's on Facebook or Pinterest or anything else, you got to stop the scroll. You got to engage them early on.
Yep.
And then from there you go. And I've seen it with Ed's, you know, stuff that we promoted with other guys in the agency, with my affiliate business, whatever else, that you crack the right creative, you can scale that very, very high just off one ad. Like often for, you know, health products we've promoted and whatnot, it came down to one ad out of 100 that was the one we could scale to seven figures.
And you got to test the heck out of a whole bunch.
Got to test a lot of them. Yeah. Yeah. And so that's what I always say. Like you get good at creative, you can give any media buyer a good creative with a good offer, but you give the best media buyer in the world an offer that's not great, and then the creatives aren't that good, well, you're getting them to try to scale something that's broken.
Exactly.
It's not going to work. Yeah. But don't you fix those other two, you can get somebody who's pretty cheap to hire as a media buyer, and you just provide them super good creative and really good offer. And actually, you know, in this car one, like that's been our challenge early on. We've actually lived off the reputation of the product up until now. So we're constantly trying to crack that. But in my publishing and affiliate businesses, it's all creative and that sort of thing. And, you know, at the end of the day, we're more emailers than video producers, right? So there's a difference with Facebook. Yeah. So.
Because you've done this, what should you pay a media buyer? Not an agency, but just like somebody that you're hiring in-house.
Okay, yeah. Somebody who you don't expect to actually make it convert, just like somebody who understands the platform.
You tell me. I mean, I would think that you would want people who, and maybe you hire two people, so that would be a good question, right?
Yeah, exactly. If we're talking Facebook media buyer, I've seen anywhere between 2,000 and 5,000, right? For someone who may not have like a world-renowned reputation and all this sort of stuff, but somebody you want to hire in-house, I've seen between 2,000 and 5,000 a month. I've seen some foreign workers, Philippines, that sort of thing, who do good work. Like mechanically, they know the system really well. They've been through courses like Depeche's courses. It's like I've seen 1,200 to 1,500.
Okay.
In those cases, though, typically you're going to have a second person that does the creatives and the creative strategy. And often that's part of that's going to be from the founder.
Okay.
Right? Because they know the messaging the most. And then that could be another, I mean, I know guys paying for in-house people when it's all said and done, you know, 5,000 to 7,000 a month for the creative side of things.
Okay.
And this is Facebook because there's video and that's expensive. At the end of the day, there's not many ways around it. You know, on our email side of our business, the guys who do the traffic, Chris and Max, they do the creatives too. But it's very different. It's not video produced and all that sort of stuff.
Okay. So most overlooked traffic source?
Email.
Email.
Yeah, email and direct to site, buying. And I'll explain that quickly, but okay. And I'm not going to out like where I get my traffic, but
yeah.
If you have like relevant, large websites, publishers mm-hmm. in your space that are just, really big in that market, whatever else.
Like in the conservative space, it'd be Newsmax or something.
Great,
like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, absolutely. Newsmax.
Going to
Breitbart,
them, buying an email drop. Basically.
Going there, buying an email drop, buying display banners, banners on their site.
Yep.
Some of them will do native articles on their site, and those mm-hmm. are great.
Yeah.
I love those.
Yeah.
So that's most overlooked by far. Everyone thinks Facebook
okay.
right now.
Yeah. What about favorite tools? Just any kind of tools.
For, let's say, tracking for, see which buys are profitable and whatnot, we use FunnelFlux.
Okay.
It's more from the affiliate world. So a lot of guys from the affiliate side use FunnelFlux. We like to use it, in general for all of our buys and for tracking email drops and all that.
Cool.
So I love that one.
Okay. Any others?
For e-commerce, Glue, G-L-E-W.
G-L-E-W. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. And so what it shows you, it's for Shopify. Okay. I believe it plugs into Magento as well.
Okay.
It kind of shows you which products are being purchased together frequently. I mean, that's like one feature out of hundreds.
Okay.
But it gives you a deep analytics into the product performance and the customer performance of your shop in general.
Nice.
And then it'll export audience of customers into a custom audience. So if you want people who bought within this date range over this dollar value on this touch point, blah, 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 you can select them. That's the hottest audience and you can export them to Facebook for custom audiences.
Nice.
So that's very, very cool. And then I use another one for top level KPIs called ordermetrics.io.
Okay.
And again, that's a Shopify app. And that kind of gives me just an overarching KPIs like COGS, like cost of goods, all this sort of stuff. And then we can, I have someone that puts all that into a daily KPI sheet every day. This is the most professional I've been for tracking. Because affiliates, we don't have to track COGS and all that stuff. And so this has been quite a bit different, So even when I had my e-commerce, my nutraceutical business from 2014 to 2017, a lot of this was done by someone else. It was in Limelight. Shopify makes it pretty easy. So.
Okay. And we have a thing in our War Room Mastermind called Wicked Smart, where mm-hmm. everybody kind of submits the thing that's proven to be working the best. That's super cool.
Okay.
Do you have anything that you would submit if we were doing a Wicked Smart today?
See, and it's not very glamorous, but really just buying email traffic.
It doesn't have to be glamorous.
Buying email traffic, just buying relevant email traffic. I still have not seen a source that, you probably can know as well. I haven't seen a source that converts as well on first touch point.
Yeah.
So if you need to turn $1 into X quickly, rent somebody's email list.
Is there a tool for finding that or anything? I know there used to be a couple of them, something Scout. I don't remember what the name of it is, but.
Yeah, we never use the... we never use the email spy tools and whatnot. Honestly, what we do is we just subscribe to the newsletters.
Okay. Would you Google Sealant newsletter, for example, if you were doing Sealant?
Oh, no, I would do I might do DIY car detailing.
Okay.
Or forum, DIY car detailing forum or magazine.
Forum is great.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Okay. And then so the cool thing about forums is forum traffic is kind of getting lower and lower, right? But they have those lists of members.
Mm-hmm.
And often they're not offering that sort of thing, but anything's negotiable. You just email them and contact the administrator.
That.
Yeah, it's pretty,
that's
again,
cool. I like that.
That was Will suggested that years ago.
Yeah.
It still works because, you just forum guys, they got to make money. And now they have just some banner at the top. It doesn't do much, but
nice.
List rentals. So I guess that's the Wicked Smart.
It is actually great. The forum, the Googling, the thing plus form or what was the other former magazine
yeah
really,
exactly
really good
yeah
do you travel much
I do actually I've traveled a lot this year mostly for work for business
thing that you do travel hack wise that makes life easier better makes the road friendlier
man not like your hotel thing
that thing works
I read that to my wife last night and she's like that's really smart not particularly there's one thing I do is I get first class or business class flights, I just do the upgrade at the counter.
Yeah.
Yeah. So similar to how your hotel thing, I book, economy and then you go to the kiosk, it's several hundred dollars more, but then you go up to the counter and especially on Southwest and stuff, it's
British Airways International out of San Diego, if you're ever going to Europe.
Okay.
You could actually book coach because the flights are not full. The last one I flew on, I'm going to be super generous and say that there were 30 crew members that got on and then 60 passengers on a 787, which holds, I think, maybe 400 people. So they were at the front desk the whole time. We got upgrades to first. We got upgrades to business. Sure. We got upgrades to Windows. Whatever you want, we got your upgrade right here. Wow. And if you're willing to take the risk on a long international flight, book economy, and then upgrade, agree 100% at the desk. Sure. Yeah. And if you're not willing to take the risk, then book business, and you can still potentially upgrade to first for next to nothing. But lately, man, flights have been, especially international flights, have been $200 to $500 different from business to first.
Oh, wow.
And then the other thing that's kind of interesting, if you want to like throw a vacation on the back of a business trip and, you know, and it's your dollar, so you care, then like I recently flew to Israel to speak and to fly to London, because I was also going to London and I was flying my wife to London. It was $11,000 first class to fly to London from San Diego on British Airways. And for me to fly to London and spend a day or two, then to Tel Aviv, then back to London to spend about 2 weeks going a couple other places in Europe, and then fly back to San Diego was $5,300.
Wow.
So that's like, amazing. So the moral is then, I should publish that because I never really told anybody this, is that really, if you've got the time to tack a vacation on, then price the place that you have to go that's the super major hub, like London, Paris, Rome, Frankfurt, you know, Amsterdam.
For sure.
But don't do that as the end destination, because so many businesses are doing that and not checking. The airlines don't have to price competitively. But if you can go from there to some other place that you would actually want to go and maybe spend 3-4 days or a week, then you might cut your airfare in half and pay for the rest of the vacation for free.
That's incredible.
That's pretty cool, right?
That's very cool, yeah.
So if people want to find out more about your agency, what's the name of the agency and the website again?
Yeah, DSV2 Media. So it's dsv2.com. So like David Sam Victor, number two.
But don't get a hold of you unless, because you're super selective and only have a few customers. So to save people that you're like, you know, well, I'll give you $500 a month to run my Facebook ads. That's not what you do. So can you
Typically, I mean, it's been a while since we've taken on an agency client, but if we do, they're typically spending already between $40,000 and $50,000 a month.
Okay.
So the offer's kind of dialed
media spend.
Yeah, total media spend, and the offer's dialed in. If they are getting any sort of success on email, it's even more appealing because, I mean, we got a lot of email sources. So, yeah, that's typically what we're looking at. Yeah.
Okay. And then product-wise or other ways to get a hold of you, I don't want you to reveal anything you don't want to reveal, but I want you to get people getting in touch with you that you would like to reach out.
No, for sure. You know, I'm on Facebook, Chad Hamzy, H-A-M-Z-E-H. Yeah. Right. And you know, I'm easy to hit up and that sort of thing. I don't have any training materials right now. I've thought of doing it again in the future, but I've been focusing on this startup so much. So
is Black Book 2 still available online?
It is still available online.
Because there's still a lot of stuff in there. Like you said, the interfaces have changed, but a lot of the concepts. So if people were interested in that, that would be it.
Yeah, trafficblackbook.com. Okay. Yeah. Cool. So yeah.
Awesome, man. Thank you so much for being here today. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Yeah, absolutely.
Sweet. For sure.
You've been listening to Business Lunch with Roland Fraser. If you're enjoying the show, let us know by subscribing and leaving a review. And for more information, go to businesslunchpodcast.com. Thank you for listening.